Alma drove an old baby blue Volkswagen Beetle. The car was something of a business venture for her. Since Kenyan nationals living abroad could ship a car back to Kenya free of a hefty import tax, she had figured that she could use it during the year that she'd be teaching at the University of Nairobi, and then sell it for the cost of shipping and perhaps a small profit. Unfortunately, the engine had come down with a tubercular knock, and the muffler had fallen off on the way to the airport. As we sputtered out onto the four-lane highway, Alma clutching the steering wheel with both hands, I couldn't keep from laughing. "Should I get out and push?" Zaituni frowned. "Hey, Betty, don't say anything about this car. This is a beautiful car. It just needs some new paint. In fact, Alma has already promised that I will have this car after she leaves." Alma shook her head. "Your aunt is trying to cheat me now, Barak. I promised we would talk about it, that is all." "What's there to talk about?" Zaituni said, winking at me. "I tell you, Alma, I will give you the best price." The two of them began to talk at the same time, asking how my trip had been, telling me all the plans they had made, listing all the people I had to see. Wide plains stretched out on either side of the road, savanna grass mostly, an occasional thorn tree against the horizon, a landscape that seemed at once ancient and raw. Gradually the traffic thickened, and crowds began to pour out of the countryside on their way to work, the men still buttoning their flimsy shirts, the women straight-backed, their heads wrapped in bright-colored scarves. Cars meandered across lanes and roundabouts, dodging potholes, bicycles, and pedestrians, while rickety jitneys, called matatus, I was told, stopped without any warning to cram on more passengers. It all seemed strangely familiar, as if I had been down the same road before. And then I remembered other mornings, in Indonesia, with my mother and Lolo talking in the front seat, the same smell of burning wood and diesel, the same stillness that lingered at the center of the morning rush, the same look on people's faces as they made their way into a new day, with few expectations other than making it through, and perhaps a mild hope that their luck would change, or at least hold out. We went to drop off Zaituni at Kenya Breweries, a large, drab complex where she worked as a computer programmer. Stepping out of the car, she leaned over again to kiss me on the cheek, then wagged her finger at Alma. "You take good care of Betty now," she said. "Make sure he doesn't get lost again." Once we were back on the highway, I asked Alma what Zaituni had meant about my getting lost. Alma shrugged. "It's a common expression here," she said. "Usually it means a person hasn't seen you in a while. You've been lost, they'll say. Or, don't get lost. Sometimes it has a more serious meaning. Let's say a son or husband moves to the city or to the west, like our Uncle Omar in Boston. They promise to return after completing school. They say they'll send for the family once they get settled. At first they write once a week, then it's just once a month. Then they stop writing completely. No one sees them again. They've been lost, you see, even if people know where they are." The Volkswagen struggled up an ascending road, shaded by thick groves of eucalyptus and liana vines. Elegant old homes receded behind the hedges and flower beds, homes that had once been exclusively British, Alma said, but that now mostly served government officials and foreign embassy staffs. At the top of the rise, we made a sharp right and parked at the end of a gravel driveway next to a yellow two-story apartment building that the university rented out to its faculty. A huge lawn sloped down from the apartment to meet patches of banana trees and high forest, and, further down, a narrow, murky stream that ran through a wide gully pitted with stones. Alma's apartment, a small, comfortable space with French doors that let sunlight wash through the rooms, was on the first floor. There were stacks of books everywhere, and a collage of photographs hanging on one wall, studio portraits and Polaroid shots, a patchwork of family that Alma had stitched together for herself. Above Alma's bed, I noticed a large poster of a black woman, her face tilted upward toward an unfolding blossom, the words, "I have a dream," printed below. "So what's your dream, Alma?" I said, setting down my bags. Alma laughed. "That's my biggest problem, Barak. Too many dreams. A woman with dreams always has problems." My exhaustion from the trip must have showed, because Alma suggested that I take a nap while she went to the university to teach her class. I dropped onto the cot she'd prepared and fell asleep to the buzz of insects outside the window. When I awoke, it was dusk, and Alma was still gone. From the kitchen, I noticed a troop of black-faced monkeys gathered beneath a banyan tree. The older ones sat warily at the tree's base, watching with knotted brows as pups scampered about through the long, winding roots. Rinsing my face in the sink, I put water on for tea, then opened the door that led into the yard. The monkeys all froze in their tracks, their eyes turned toward me in unison. A few feet away, the air filled with the beat of huge green wings, and I watched the dreamy ascent of a long-necked bird as it sent out a series of deep-throated cries and drifted towards distant canopies.